and welcome to another edition of Stories from the Hurricane Highway with Mark Suddeth. That's me. Tonight we're going to take a look back and revisit the year 2002. So what is that, about 18 years ago now? Wow! So glad you can join me for this latest podcast episode right here on Patreon, exclusively on Patreon, and for our Hurricane Track Insiders. We're ready for another edition, another chapter, as we move on down the road of the Hurricane Highway. These are stories, these are the intimate details that, as I've said before, are very similar to what we would have if this were a book on tape, I guess. We also have the Hurricane Highway television type series that I have begun producing, episode 1, now available on Patreon and our Hurricane Track Insiders site. And that is a new series that's, like I said, a TV-type series. It's a series. It's going to be at least 8 episodes, and episode 1 is finished, and I posted that on Patreon and Hurricane Track Insider recently. And episode 2 should be ready by the end of the month, with the 8th episode, hopefully, by mid to late May. I've got my work cut out for me for that. But the podcast series, of course, is more behind-the-scenes stuff, slower burn, if you will, you know, a longer duration. We can break some of these up into 2 parts, which I've done often, some of them 3 parts. And we'll do that again with this episode, this chapter, the year 2002. I'll have part 1 tonight and part 2 next Wednesday. I say tonight. It's funny because you can listen to this anytime, but I'm recording it on Wednesday, February the 12th, for what it's worth, all right? So you may listen to it tonight, you may listen to it 30 nights from now. Who knows? That's the beauty of these podcasts. You can listen to it on any device you choose, generally, and at any time you wish. So, the year 2002, the first full year of really having the momentum of major storm surge map projects, with this Project Impact program. The Isuzu Rodeo had done really well for me in 1999, 2000, and 2001 as our first intercept vehicle, chase vehicle, whatever you want to call it. That was doing great. My website was doing great. My relationship with Lowe's was entering its first full year as well. Lowe's Home Improvement Stores, our big partnership. And of course, as I mentioned, and as we all know, in September of 2001, of course, we had the attacks, the terrorist attacks, and a lot of things were kind of in limbo. We weren't sure as a nation, how were we going to proceed with a lot of different things? The economy, you know, we were getting ready to presumably go to war, and, you know, there was a lot of stuff up in the air, and 2 of those things directly impacted me. One was, of course, my relationship with Lowe's. Was that going to be able to continue? You know, that was, you know, the biggest single event since Pearl Harbor, September 11th, 2001. And so what was that going to do in terms of the future? And also, these storm surge nor'easter projects that I was doing for these 2 villages in Long Island, East Rockaway and Freeport, very close to New York City. You can take the Long Island Railroad and be in and out of the city in no time. Lots of people knew folks that I was working with who worked with the fire department and first responders, police, etc., emergency managers. I mean, hey, hurricanes and emergencies, they're one and the same when hurricanes come, right? And so it was all intermixed, and there was this big question mark. But like I mentioned in the last chapter there, the last episode, from 2001, where Jesse Bass was our guest, I really commended the leaders up there in Long Island for forging ahead, you know, understanding they were dealing with a lot of grief and a lot of anxiety about what happened in the awesome Big Apple and the financial district there with the loss of the World Trade Center towers, etc., you know, and more down there at what we call Ground Zero. They just kept going forward, you know. And that really was commendable. They were not going to ignore natural disasters. And That was really important. So that allowed me to continue with this project. And so 2002, I was forging ahead and working on some really unique things growing out of my experiences from producing hurricane tracking charts in the mid to late 90s, these storm surge maps that I won the award from FEMA for in 1999, my work in 3D modeling to create animations and using real-world photographs to add digital CGI images to, i.e. water, you know, being able to show water on photographs and how high the water could get and to animate all that. Again, I was leading the way in that field, but boy, it was catching up to me quickly. Lots of other TV stations, you know, production companies, the movie industry, you know, personal computers from Macintosh, the Macs, which I used the PowerMac G3 to do all my work. Even Windows-based PCs were catching up. People were using Photoshop, video animation software, you name it, nonlinear video editing. It just goes on and on and on. I wasn't going to be, you know, sort of the king of the hill for too long in the world of dominating hurricane awareness, graphics, and innovation. You know, you got to keep going and innovating and evolving or you get left behind. In 2002, you know, I did that. And so one of the big things that I wanted to do for this project, in the Project Impact program for East Rockaway in Freeport on Long Island, was to really explain what we mean by storm surge even more so than ever before, because they're not used to it up there. And one of the people that was involved, it was a gentleman by the name of Dennis McCabe, and he was the Project Impact coordinator up there in Freeport. And I remember him in this interview that I did with him, and I'm actually going to play part of that as a clip in this episode. So that's going to be pretty cool. Another time when I get to, hey, here's a clip. I'm going to play some of this for you in just a little bit. But he talked about that hurricanes are expected in Florida and in North Carolina. And of course, he had that great Long Island dialect, accent, whatever you want to call it, that I can't do, but he did a great job because he lives there. But it was, it's true. You know, Long Island has a hurricane history, of course, but not as rich, obviously, as latitudes farther to the south. Florida, Texas, Louisiana, the Carolinas, you know, goes without saying. So there was this real desire by me and the leaders up there to really emphasize the science. What is storm surge? How is it created? The mechanisms behind it, some history behind it. And then, I guess, more importantly, I'm struggling as to the right word here and phrase, but what do we do about it? You know, that word mitigation. How do we mitigate future damage from storm surge? Elevation, awareness, proper mapping, etc. All of that would go hand in hand. And this was really, really exciting to do this for Long Island, New York. So I got to visit up there a couple times. And here's another trivia question in the making for you, all right? You know, one day, you know, Jeopardy, some trivia game, Trivial Pursuit, Hurricane Edition. Who knows, right? Maybe in my book, we'll do a quiz show. I will do a book someday, I promise. And this podcast series, I've said it before, it's going to be the basis for a book. We'll get a ghostwriter, and I'll work together with them and use this podcast, and we'll crank out a heck of a paperback book for you. And one of the quiz questions that we will derive from all of that was this. The very first time, and remember, let me just sidebar again real quick. The beauty of this podcast series and how it's different from the docuseries that I'm producing, the television series, if you will, the Hurricane Highway, these are stories from the Hurricane Highway. Remember, so this is the companion. If you watch The Walking Dead, they have a companion TV show called The Talking Dead. I don't know if you knew that, but it's true. And there are other Star Wars, that whole phenomenon has a podcast, NASCAR and NFL. There are all these companion podcast series to things in film, television, movies, etc. So anyway, this is no different. And so this is a companion to the Hurricane Highway docuseries, the television series. And the, really the beauty of this are these intimate details that we can go into, you know, and take it or leave it. Some people may find it boring, and that's fine. That's the other beauty of this. You can just turn it off and not listen, or, oh, I really like this. And you can keep listening, whatever the case may be. That's the beauty of this in one regard, is that I can talk about these little details, the minutiae, as they call it, of these amazing stories. Again, take it or leave it. So one of those little tidbits here, the very first time that I ever experienced a Boston Market food place, it's not really fast food because it's like home cooking. If you've ever been to Boston Market, I'd seen commercials, I'd heard about it, and they don't have those in Wilmington, North Carolina. And I went up to Long Island a few times to do this project, to meet with people, to shoot film, video, background stuff. Sorry about the dog barking. I'm recording this at the height of the afternoon when the kids are outside playing with the dogs. So we'll just have to ignore it. But first, hey, the dog heard me talking about Boston Market, and she got all excited. It's a she. Delilah. That's Delilah barking. I think you can hear it. Maybe you can't. And if you can't, you're like, what is he talking about? Anyway, first time I went to Boston Market was in Freeport, New York, in early 2002, I believe it was. Might have been at the end of 2001 when I went up there. Bottom line, this project was the first time I got introduced to Boston Market. So write that down. First time Mark went to Boston Market. And I love Boston Market. I go there whenever I can when I'm on the road. You can actually eat healthy there if you so desire. You get rotisserie chicken. You can get some fresh vegetables, and it all looks good. It's wholesome, and it's like home cooking. You can't beat it. It's not some other fast food, whatever, that we're all familiar with, that I enjoy. So Boston Market was the first, you know, the first experience was Long Island, New York, as part of this project. Now that I've completely derailed, talking about my restaurant tastes, back on task here of what we were doing. So, you know, got to keep yourself well fed, and I did that at Boston Market, and I kept my energy levels up, right? And the key to the success of some of these projects is through your stomach, your tummy, and that was no different for me. And I was able to really understand their needs in Long Island. You know, their history, as I mentioned. What are some of their challenges? And to immerse myself up there, I would stay up there for days at a time, meeting with town officials, emergency management, fire, police, insurance folks, regular homeowners, interviewing people, visiting different locations that flooded and past events. Powerful nor'easters like 1992, 1996, hurricane history, Gloria, 1985, the Long Island Express, 1938, right? And there are others. And so it was just an absolute thrill and an honor to fly into JFK, get a cab, maybe somebody would come pick me up and take me out to these two villages. Or I'd jump on the Long Island Railroad, the LIR, and go out there, you know, to these different places. And all the while building up this amazing project that was really going to be innovative. And so I remember in February of 2002, took some time and flew down to the National Hurricane Center and interviewed Max Mayfield, the director of the National Hurricane Center, in the day. And got his perspective, and he was really behind this project. Anything that we could do to promote awareness using science, using history, and he was really, really excited about my graphics that I was going to put together, that I was doing stuff for Manhattan. I had done some work with the Hurricane Center for New York City, Remember, we talked about this in a prior episode that I had done some animations of storm surge using real photographs and animating water going into the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel or whatever it is, right? The Brooklyn Battery, I think it is. So Max was behind it, you know, 110%. And I got to spend time with him and, you know, doing an interview, just a brief segment, you know, about hurricane history, storm surge, etc., you know, to have that authoritative tone from the director of the National Hurricane Center as part of this kind of like documentary infomercial thing that we were putting together about storm surge in New York. I was doing this video production to go along with the maps that we were producing. It was like a big multimedia project. Very, very exciting to do all that. So it rolled on, you know, through the spring. I worked on it, went up there and again met with people to talk about the mapping side. How would we present this to the public to get them to understand their elevations, you know, in relation to what does that mean if there is a hurricane or a powerful nor'easter? The difference between nor'easters and hurricanes, they both are big wind machines generally, and they both create a storm surge, but one of them typically has bigger waves, usually the nor'easters do. And again, it was just like I was getting to live my passion as a career. And it was just great. And Jesse was a part of this as well. I would consult with him, get some feedback, get some ideas. And that carried us through the spring. And once we got to early June, that's when the project would officially unveil up in these two communities, these two villages in New York. I had worked with Lowe's, as I said, for 1 year already by the time we got to 02. And the contract got renewed for 2002 with a little bit more budget available. And we were going to do even more of these hurricane expos for Lowe's. I would go around the country even more. You know, it was, it's just, when I think back as to how this evolved year after year, everything built upon the previous year. And in some cases, the previous 6 months, things would move along quick enough that, you know, 6 months later, stuff would change, you know, for the better. Innovation, computing power, sponsorships, opportunities, whatever. And the same held true for our new relationship with Sprint. Remember, I talked about we were discovered, Jesse and myself, our project was discovered on the Today Show because I was using a Sanyo Sprint-branded bar phone to do wireless internet in 2001. And so my relationship with Sprint grew in 2002. They offered me more technology, more devices, testing, etc. And, you know, between that and Lowe's and my project for the two villages in New York, plus I was still producing hurricane tracking charts, paper versions, for areas down south, Norfolk, Portsmouth area, Wilmington, Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, Charlotte, Charleston, you know, and there might have been others. I don't know. It was definitely the heyday still of producing these paper maps and really being involved with massive hurricane awareness campaigns. And as we got into the spring and the summer, Lowe's launched a big media campaign. They would get me out in front of TV stations, radio station interviews, you name it. I would go down to New Orleans, Metairie, Louisiana, New Orleans area, Tampa, St. Pete, Miami, Texas, Houston, Texas, you know, the Carolinas, you know, Southeast Virginia, and then up in Raleigh, Durham. And it was up in that area that I met someone else that was also heavily into weather, big interest in weather, and was also doing their own type of thing related to awareness, capturing data, technology kind of stuff. And his name was John Van Pelt. And I met him at a Lowe's Hurricane Expo in the Durham area. We became friends in 2002. He had a website, still does, called stormstudy.com. And we got along very well. Good sense of humor, extreme bright marketing guy, you name it. And he and I and Jesse were like starting to forge this idea we're going to do, you know, hurricane stuff, maybe other severe weather. You know, it was expanding the role of the internet, getting my name out there more, meeting more people. You think social media is, it's amazing now. I mean, because now you can just go at like light speed with stuff, that term viral. And there's no, you know, comparison between the internet of 2020 and what we had in 2002. I know that. But back then, though, it was a big deal. Being able to send your webcam image to hurricanetrack.com every couple of minutes. The exposure by doing blogging anywhere I wanted to. You know, if I was at a Lowe's Hurricane Expo, I'd blog about it. Throw some pictures up. Taking digital pictures, finally putting those online. Things were just progressing, right? I met John, as I mentioned, at one of the Hurricane Expos in the spring to early summer. And that relationship began, partnership with John from Raleigh. And so enter early June, and now it's time for the big unveiling of the Project Impact Hurricane and Nor'easter multimedia project for these two villages up in New York. So we were going to have a big celebration, kind of our own expo up there, if you will. The two villages were going to make a big deal about it, lots of media. State Farm was the major corporate sponsor and partner for both the villages, and it was a big shindig, okay? So I talked Jesse into going with me. You know, hey man, take a few days, come up to Long Island. It was early June. Let's go hang out and let's roll this thing out. So I'd printed up tens of thousands of storm surge maps, elevation maps explaining, you know, what storm surge is. It was the paper version. We had paper, online, you know, like a website, and a multimedia, a video. You know, like I said, almost like a documentary infomercial kind of deal. A public awareness video, that's the best way to describe it. So off we go, drove up there, and I remember, so the Isuzu was a straight shift, you know, isn't that what you call it? It's a manual transmission, stick shift. And I remember Jesse was driving, he took a shift, and it's a pretty long stretch from Wilmington to Long Island. You know, it takes you about 10 to 12 hours, depending on when you stop and how long you stop. And it was so funny, somewhere along I-95, I'll tell you this little quick side story. I snoozed off, you know, dozed off in the passenger seat. The Isuzu was loaded with maps and a screen projector thing and just all kinds of stuff for this big unveiling of the project up there. You know, luggage for a few days, whatever. And Jesse's driving along and I'm sleeping, taking a nap. And we're in, you know, somewhere probably between D.C. and Baltimore, you know, thick with traffic, 5,000 lanes thick, you know, whatever. It's a bit of an embellishment, but it is. It's wide lanes of traffic, millions of cars. It's just mad pandemonium. And I remember it was late in the afternoon, whatever day this was, we were headed up there. And, maybe he had to hit the brakes or something, and it jolted me from my nap, you know, where you're snoozing and you're like, whoa, I'm awake. And I woke up and you know how it is. You don't know where you are sometimes and you're sleeping. And as human beings, we do some weird things. I woke up. I was like, whoa, you know, where am I? Whatever. And I look ahead, out the windshield and I'm like, hey, look out. There's a ladder or tires or something in the road. There's tires. And I just freaked out. And of course, there was nothing there. I was hallucinating. It was like a mirage you just wake up from that. Boy, I scared the heck out of him, though. It was so funny. He was like freaking out. What? What am I looking for? And I go, oh, never mind. I was just seeing things. And I laid kind of back down in my seat and went back to sleep. Oh, that was funny. We can look back and laugh now. But for about 5 seconds, it was very tense as good old Mark was hallucinating. Wouldn't be the last time. There will be a future podcast episode when Greg Nordstrom's involved. You'll see. You'll hear. When you're on road trips and you're tired and whatever, you wake up and you see something in the road, it kind of freaks you out a little bit, even though it was not real. So there was that. We made it to Long Island just fine. And we went up and we did this big unveiling lots of media attention. Everybody was real proud. We handed out these storm surge maps, unveiled the public awareness video, and I did a pretty good job editing that together. And that's what I'm going to do here. I'm going to play a clip for you from that video and just let you kind of hear how it went down, etc. Maybe about a minute, minute and a half for you. And then we'll resume with the podcast here. So here's a clip from the 18-year-old now, almost 18 years old, public awareness video that I did for East Rockaway and Freeport in Long Island, New York.
The probability of a major hurricane hitting some area like Long Island is going to be extremely small. But in the case of Long Island, it has happened in the past, and it will happen again in the future.
Project Impact has been about building a disaster-resistant community. We've been trying to get people to realize that the threat of storms is a real threat up here. We haven't had a major storm in several years, so people kind of get comfortable, and they feel that a big storm is going to go to North Carolina or to Florida and not going to go after them. And Project Impact is our way of trying to get the message to people that they are in harm's way here on the coast of Long Island, and flooding is a real problem. It can happen in the summer during a hurricane. It can happen during the winter during a nor'easter. Once the storm passes and the tide goes down, no one wants to be in a shelter. People want to be able to get back into their home. That's one of the most important things, having something to go back to. So that's why we're building a disaster-resistant community by strengthening the structures in the community as they exist today.
All right, so it turned out really well. It was very well received. We gave away, like I said, tens of thousands of maps. A very proud moment. The folks up there were receptive. We had like a big dinner. I remember they always treated me like royalty. They took me out to eat. We would go down on the waterfront in Freeport and had a big meal. I remember I saw the bill for it. It was like $637 for all these people that were up there. And they fed me well. No Boston Market for you, man. You're coming down to the waterfront, you know, and we're going to eat some real locally caught seafood, you know, whatever, off the waters of Long Island. And they did. They treated me really well. I felt extremely honored. You know, just little old me, you know, I was just a dude from North Carolina who just was a hurricane nerd, right? Weather geek. And I turned it into a career, and I was doing some big, big things now moving up into friggin' Long Island, New York. You know, I mean, it just doesn't get any better than that. And we finished up in Long Island. Jesse and I made our way back, and we were ready for the hurricane season. 2002, you know, what would it have in store? You know, we now have Jesse that can go with me on missions if he wants to, if he's available. I did more of these Lowe's Hurricane Expos, as I talked about, resumed those around the Southeast. I remember I did one down in Florida, and John Van Pelt went with me and took his vast knowledge of severe weather and he did radio. Back in the day before I'd met him in the Raleigh area. So he had a good voice, good radio voice, very well-spoken, very intelligent, and you know, not shy. And so I remember he accompanied me. We drove down to, The Treasure Coast Mall. That's right. And they actually let me drive my Isuzu in there. I say let me, they wanted me to. So we took the anemometer off the top, lowered the little mast that was on there, and drove the Isuzu into the Treasure Coast Mall, and we've talked to literally thousands of people over this weekend in early to mid-June. It wasn't too long after I got back from Long Island that we did this, and just amazing just to, you know, man, I'm in Long Island one weekend. Now I'm down in the Treasure Coast area, Stuart, Florida, that vicinity, Jensen Beach, that area of southeast Florida. And thousands of people came out. All the media was out there. Just this massive groundswell of attention from a lot of people about hurricanes. And it was so amazing to be that well received. People were just enthralled by the Isuzu. You know, you think about my history now, 20-something years later that all of this began. You know, in 02, people were excited even back then. You know, they saw the Isuzu. Once we got it in, you would drive it in these big, you know, you've seen vehicles inside of malls before, and that's how you do it. They open up these specific doors, and you drive in, and we had to get the anemometer down like I explained, but once we got it in there, we put the anemometer back up, and it just looked like something out of Twister. You know, that's what people said. Oh, this is like that movie Twister. And people were just so excited to see the Isuzu, and we had some video from, you know, a few hurricanes that I had been in already, right? Bertha, Fran, Dennis, Bonnie, you know, Floyd from the 90s, and then some, you know, Barry, Hurricane, well, not quite Hurricane Barry, but Hurricane Barry from 2019 was a hurricane, but that's for later down the road. You know, what limited footage I had, I was able to show to people. The data that we could collect with the anemometer. John was real good at talking with people, getting them excited. Weather geeks came out. Just regular old people that just live there. You know, your regular Joes, as they call it. Oh, well, I'm going to go to the Hurricane Expo down at the Treasure Coast Mall. It was in Martin County, I believe, in Florida. I cannot emphasize enough how just amazing it was to be able to talk to that many people about hurricanes. It always floors me that there's that many people interested in it, that to take time out of their day. I mean, look, you're listening to this, you're interested in it. People coming out to hurricane expos, they're interested in it. That was really neat, and it was just another one of those proud moments. And so the hurricane expo season, as it were, wrapped up. We always tried to finish up in June, and we concluded up in Durham again. Always wanted to have a big presence inland in North Carolina, especially. I emphasize that with Lowe's. Hurricanes are not a coastal problem only. They also have inland impacts, and Lowe's recognized that. We would do hurricane expos in Orlando. And I think, you know, Orlando, of course, definitely in the bullseye for hurricanes coming from the Atlantic or the Gulf, but they're inland. They're not along the coast. So we would do Orlando, Charlotte, Raleigh-Durham area, Goldsboro, North Carolina. I remember doing some there, Greenville. And, you know, it was, what can I say? I had a Fortune 50 company doing anything I needed them to do to promote hurricane awareness. And that was Lowe's, and Sprint was not far behind. Sprint, that partnership was growing, and we would start to do some stuff as well. I'll talk about that more when we get into the next year, 2003. But, you know, as we wrap up part one here, the summer goes along. We got all this stuff behind us, and we're ready. John is really interested in what I'm doing, would love to go with me. He worked at an advertising company in Raleigh. I believe he was either one of the owners or he was certainly one of the partners, something like that. And he was able to take time off if he needed it, which is a big prerequisite if you ever want to do this kind of stuff. Just so you know, you got to be able to go when it's time to go. The hurricanes aren't going to wait. And John knew that. He knew that with his storm study project, that he was trying to move ahead with up in the Raleigh area. And so he expressed interest. Hey, I'd love to go on a mission if I ever can and get away from the office. I will. Jesse, of course, was available. And so to kind of wrap it up here, and we'll leave it in a little teaser, we get into the mid to late summer. Not much activity that year overall. And I remember it was probably sometime in September that we had one. You know, it was like, oh, we got one. And it was Edward. Not a big storm by any means, but something that popped up for us to go after, nevertheless. And I say us, in this case, it was going to be Jesse and myself. So with all this technology, you know, even back then, right, I get excited about what we got now, but, you know, back then we had a lot of technology. We had the Sprint wireless internet, of course, we've talked about that. And the ability to do whatever we needed to do whenever we needed to do it on the road. And so Edward popped up. It was just a tropical storm. And it was right there at the 1st of September, kind of near Labor Day, right? And it was a threat for the east central coast of Florida, Daytona Beach, points north. And honestly, it was no big deal. But we went down, Jesse and myself, and you know, we're like, all right, let's go down, tackle this, and it's a start. You know, maybe September being the peak of the hurricane season, things will amplify from here. And remember, we don't root for hurricanes to come in and destroy lives, just like firefighters don't root for big giant hotel fires so that they can go to work. They just know if there is a big hotel fire or whatever the case may be, I get to go to work. That's how that works. It's not this weird complex that we wish for death and destruction. Of course not. We don't do that. But we're jonesing to use our intellect, our technology, and our gusto, right? Our emphasis for going out and tracking down hurricanes. You want to track some down, doggone it. So if they're going to come, we're going to get them. And that's the way we looked at it. And Edward, yeah, it was like a little warm-up. Let's just put it that way as for what was coming. So Jesse and I went down to Daytona and vicinity. I remember I set up a camera up in our hotel. We got an oceanfront hotel. A lot of people bailed out for that period, canceled rooms and whatever because of the threat of a tropical storm. So we were able to get a good room right there on the ocean in Daytona. And I remember I set my video camera up, and I got a time lapse. And Edward was sheared, and the low-level center was exposed, and it came in. And I don't know if I've got video of that anywhere. I got to look for that and eventually stick it into the Hurricane Highway TV series that I'm working on, if I can find it. But you could actually see the rotation of the low-level center as it came on shore, because we went up to, whatever, 6th, 7th, 10th floor of this condo, this hotel. I don't even remember what it was. If it was a Hilton, I don't know. Doesn't matter. But we got an oceanfront room. I set the camera out on the balcony. That low-level center came like right over us. And you could see it spinning. You could see the rotation. It wasn't like a big water spout or something, but you could watch the wide shot of it coming in because you're up high, so you got a good vista. And I've always wanted to do that. Remember, I'm a weather geek, man. I love this stuff. And time-lapse is a great tool. And that was the victory from Edward. You know, otherwise a several hundred dollar mission to Florida. Every one of these matters. The ones that are sort of duds are not a big deal. I mean, thank goodness they're not all Irma or Michael or Katrina. I mean, gosh, if they were, we'd never be able to live near the coast, right? So you're going to have your Edwards from time to time that are nuisance. Media talks about them, but they're not a big problem overall. They have rip currents. They got impacts, of course, but they're not terrible. They're not memorable. But for us, they all are. They're all memorable. And for this, the victory was that time lapse showing where you could see the rotation of the storm coming ashore. And so that's where I'm going to end it. There's more. Oh, yeah, there's a lot more for part two of the year 2002 as we journey down the hurricane highway. So next week, I will go into part two, and I will at least tell you what it is. So after Edward, we wait. And later on in September of 02, what we thought was going to be the biggest event of my career at that time was coming. And it was only a couple of weeks later or so. And that was Hurricane Isidore. 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 Hurricane Isidore. And then after that, Hurricane Lily. Ended up both being very significant, and you'll have to tune in next week to understand why. But boy, do I have some stories. Those intimate details when we hit the road, what we're doing, etc. You're going to want to make sure you catch that next week. So we'll go over Hurricane Isidore and Hurricane Lily when I do part two of Stories from the Hurricane Highway the year 2002 next week. All right? Hey, as always, thank you so much for tuning in. But more importantly, again, I want to thank you for supporting this. Your patronage, your support on Patreon or as a Hurricane Track Insider, you know, sustaining member is what it's called in public radio. And when you're a patron of the arts, you sustain this for the long term. You all are making a huge difference. You allow me to be able to pay my bills in the off season, to invest in stuff that needs to be invested in, and to be ready for the next hurricane season. And in between, I get to do projects like this, the podcast series, and of course, the new television series, The Hurricane Highway. I'm very excited about all of this, and it's all because of you. And so take a look at the mirror and say, that's because of me. And it's true. It is. It's because of you, and I appreciate it so very much. And I can't wait to, you know, go in and talk about Isidore and Lily as we finish up the year 2002 for next week on Stories from the Hurricane Highway.